Welcome to Business Watch, where we're putting another interesting week into perspective. I'm afraid it's more bleak Friday than Black Friday at the moment. Not good news for the Rand or our battered and bruised tourism sector, as the UK has placed the country temporarily back under red list travel restrictions after scientists raised the alarm over the discovery of a new COVID variant. Not yet a variant of concern, though, and it is still some way from being declared such by the World Health Organization. We did see the Rand weakening to over 16 to the dollar, and currently we have about 35% of South Africans fully vaccinated. It's higher than most other African countries, but still half the government's year-end target. And we've averaged 106,000 doses a day in the last 15 days. So we really need to start seeing an urgent increase in those vaccination rates to avoid the worst impacts of a new variant on our healthcare system and the economy. We also this week had Jay Powell reappointed as US markets close early today following yesterday's Thanksgiving holiday. So lots to unpack now with Warwick Lucas, head of Galileo Securities, Raymond Parsons, a professor in the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, and Isa Mplunga, chief economist at Alexander Forbes. Warwick, let's start with Powell's reappointment. And I guess the man responsible for the mother of all liquidity injections is the best to unwind it at the end of the day. And the fact that we saw more dovish Bernard not appointed, tapering timelines certainly remain on track. We saw big moves at the short end of the yield curve. What do you make of the move?
Michael, I see it as basically a deferral to a current safe pair of hands. I mean, after all, Powell has sat in the job for some time. He clearly has been through some pretty strange times, as all of us have. And generally, markets tend to be very wary of a new Fed governor. So I think particularly given the circumstance that we have an inevitable tightening of monetary policy coming, regardless of who's in control at the Fed, I think the best course of action was indeed to have the pair of hands that the markets already knows rather than a new pair of hands. After all, I mean, the markets are quite finely balanced between the current kind of easy money policies that have kept markets and the economy going, and the inevitable need now to sort of trade off between inflation on the one hand and maintaining growth on the other.
And with what's going on this morning, with markets selling off around the world on this new COVID variant, I'm unsure as to ask you, my investment advisor or my doctor, whether I should be buying this dip. How are you reading this latest pullback?
I think a certain amount of digestion is in order. Look, I mean, it's kind of a replay like we saw with the ongoing trade dispute for several years between the US and China, and you would get yet another problem and markets would dip, and it would either continue to dip or there would be digestion. I think we still have to see at this stage what the digestion process is. So it could be another week, it could be another month. I would say try and sort of get a bit more sense of the news before one acts.
And Raymond, let's talk about that big news story today, being placed back on the red list temporarily by the UK, the EU closing its borders to us now as well. And sadly, this is the reality that confronts us. We're being punished or prejudiced here because of the excellence of our work, our genomic sequencing, and our scientists doing the right thing ethically. You can't blame them. They've got the information. You probably could critique the way the information was delivered yesterday. And that's certainly where I do have some sympathy with those who are criticizing what happened. What do you make of it all?
Hi, Michael. Look, I think you're quite right. We may have excellence in our scientific research. We don't seem to have excellence in the way we actually communicate bad news, which needs to be managed like all other news. So I think one might have some questions about the way all this has been communicated. But given the realities, it seems as if our bleak Friday or the Black Friday is certainly going to be followed by a Blue Monday next week, as a result of this development. I would just put two or three issues on the table, given the new uncertainty that's been injected, both from a global point of view and from a South African point of view. Firstly, this whole dilemma of lives and livelihoods are now back on the table. And we must now see that whether we've learned the lessons of the past 21 months as to how to deal with the pandemic from both an economic and a health point of view. And obviously the responses of our government in particular are now important. So my second point would be, as a matter of urgency, I would certainly think, since this is a business program, that the business community will urgently inject whatever views they have today to government, to the president, to the cabinet, as to how they see the options, as to how this should be dealt with, because government will be meeting over the weekend. So I really think it's quite important that that voice be heard. The third point is that obviously, as economists, we might have to get our pencils out and look again at some of our forecasts. It may be a little early now, but I think nonetheless, this does inject a new element of uncertainty, depending once again on how it is handled. But you may recall that in his MPC address a week or two ago, the governor of the Reserve Bank also said, look, this virus is still an economic threat. And I think we need to take that on board. So, I mean, really, vigilance and vaccination are now, of course, the watchwords for all of us. It's something South Africa could do without. We were hoping that next year might bring better news. This, unfortunately, is creating a cloud over what we expect. And I think we now have to just make sure that we've learned the lessons of the past year or so, and we will manage this latest threat as skillfully and as smartly as we can, given the realities on the ground.
And given those realities, Isa, and to my earlier point, we don't yet know whether or not this is a variant of concern. We're back in that zone of not knowing what we don't know effectively. So one doesn't want to preempt or be too hasty here. What did you make of the way the message was communicated or handled yesterday and still to this point with the impact that it's had on the rand and the markets? It does look to have been very poorly handled.
Look, Michael, I think there is no better way to communicate bad message. It's going to be bad anyway when it comes out. So for me, the way it was communicated is neither here nor there. It is the objective facts that we have a variant that is reported to have the largest mutations. And I have two points that I want to highlight. First, perhaps it signals that perhaps the SARB should have waited to hike that interest rate, because there is so much uncertainty. Wait a bit and see how the fourth wave is going to be. Wait a bit and see what is the budget going to look like next year, February. And then check that news into the MPC that will come in March. You would also have quite a little bit of more information about, you know, what you expect for the year ahead. The second thing is, as far as the fiscus is concerned, remember in the MTBPS there was no commitment or no decision that was made as far as extending that 350 COVID relief grant. That has to wait for the budget. Now we have this variant that is coming. It's likely to put more pressure, which means that extension is likely to come. And when it comes, it means the projections that were given in the MTBPS are likely to change slightly. So we have fiscal risks that are coming. And in addition to that, the public sector wage agreement that is going to come for 2022. So those fiscal risks are likely to materialize. And if they do materialize, it means we're going to end up in a far worse position than where we were told in the MTBPS. So that's where I see the risk coming out of this.
And one could even add to that, Isa, the inflationary pressures that we're likely to see now as well, with the rand above 16 to the dollar and oil staying stubbornly high this week, despite the US and others releasing their strategic reserves. The market not really buying that. The market rather saying, well, maybe this is a little bit worse than we had initially anticipated. And we're already seeing that come through in workers agitating for higher wages in the mining sector. There's strikes now at Massmart as well. So all of this builds up to increased wage pressure in the system as well. Warwick, from a market perspective, we did see quite a big sell-off in Tsoho and a few other hospitality and gaming related stocks. And if we have a look at, you know, one strategy through a period like this, would you just be sitting on your hands, holding tight before we know exactly what's going on?
Well, Michael, I think the key issue is whether or not businesses are able to basically sustain themselves or not. I think it's certainly true that regardless of the way in which the chips are falling, a lot of us have been able to quite substantially adapt to the new environment. But of course, there's some industries that are simply too exposed to the way of doing things before COVID. And I guess that that hospitality is one of those difficult industries in that it inevitably involves a lot of human movement and social interaction. So it's a tricky place for them.
And City Lodge, another big mover today. PSG have been calling a switch to value, and they're wanting to guard against inflation. Is that a narrative that you're currently positioning for, Warwick?
Michael, it's quite a tricky one to tell at this stage. I mean, in terms of looking at the US data, I mean, obviously the very worst came out in the cyclical type inflation, particularly the likes of the energy complex, which was the biggest part of the recent surge that we saw. But nevertheless, the so-called core, which is ex food and energy, is also quietly creeping higher and looking robust. So what you want to see is whether or not there's going to be a natural rolling over, i.e. that the inflation is transitory, or whether it actually takes on a more sinister and substantial form and actually becomes systemic. Now, it's too soon to say at this stage, but I think one wants to certainly consider with an open mind the issue of, do you have to hedge against this inflation or not?
Absolutely.
Perhaps, Michael, I can add a bit here. Look, we might see the risks, but the fact is growth is still growing at above potential. It's slowing down next year, but it's still above potential. Earning expectations are still quite good. If we look over the last 1 year, year to date, value as an investment style has been outperforming everything, even in the last quarter, which means it's still holding up. Small caps outperforming, you know, the large caps, mid caps outperforming the large caps as well. So we continue to see that trend. It's not about to roll over, at least over the short term, if we just look at trends. But the risks of a switch are definitely increasing.
Now, globally, democracy is slipping away at a record rate, also says a Swedish-based research monitoring and research body, the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, IDEA, said this week that it found a greater number of countries are sliding towards authoritarianism, while the number of democracies under threat has never been so high. We've got populist politics, we've got the use of COVID-19 and the restrictions to silence critics, a tendency of countries to mimic the anti-democratic behavior of other nations, and disinformation that's used to divide societies. All of those among the factors mainly to blame, said the Stockholm-based international organization. Among the poor performing countries listed include Russia, Hungary, Poland, Slovenia, Serbia, Turkey, Myanmar, Belarus, and Venezuela, just to mention a few of them. Now, there's also no evidence, says the study, that authoritarian regimes are any better at fighting the pandemic, despite Chinese state media reports to the contrary. But what about South Africa? Warwick, how do you think South Africa stacks up against this global trend, especially against the background of the recent local government elections?
Michael, I think that we still have a key problem that is preventing us successfully fighting the pandemic, and that is a lack of trust in the information available. The data that we've generally seen coming out, frankly, is lots and lots of numbers, but no sort of framework or lattice, as it were, of how this all hangs together. I mean, in terms of the kind of data that we really need, Let me point towards the data that came out, I think it was in January or February of this year, when the National Blood Service put out a survey indicating the level of people who had actually had COVID in terms of its blood collecting efforts. So this was hard data. It gave a very good indication of how many people had had the virus, how it was spreading, and what it was likely to do next. And in fact, all of the conclusions on that report really were quite bang on. I mean, I have not since seen similar kind of data. And moreover, I mean, the refusal of people to vaccinate relates to distrust. And we still have the draconian anti-misinformation rule about COVID, which of course means that there is simply no data because no one is reporting anything. I mean, a key missing component of the discussion is what happens with reinfections. Now, I mean, obviously, we'll hear news of, well, people get it a second time, a third time, and so on. But obviously, as a statistician will tell you, that data is biased because you only get reported cases, not unreported. So you have to be very, very careful as to what statistics you actually act on. And so we really don't have a reasonable prognosis as to how this next fourth wave supposedly will go. I mean, bear in mind, if this is becoming endemic, just like a flu or any other similar annually cyclical virus, we sort of would want to get the handle on it. Obviously, you'd hope that as people have been exposed to it, so their bodies are able to resist it. And that actually that is ultimately what gives us exit from this, both the virus and the fear of the virus.
It does boil down to that lack of trust, though, Isa, doesn't it? I mean, if you look at the declining trust in government, in politicians, all the recent surveys point to record low trust in government. And I think that's what it's battling with now when it wants to perhaps institute new non-pharmaceutical interventions, physical distancing, mask wearing, getting the vaccination. It's why we're seeing such hesitancy across all of those three measures.
Absolutely, I agree with you. But I think if we also just look the past couple of weeks, we had a lot of, you know, big gatherings around electioneering with campaigns. There was no issue that was raised with regards to that encouraging the spread of the virus. Now, as we move into the festive season, all of a sudden, citizens are told gatherings will increase, you know, the pace of infections. And really for citizens that can think that looks a little bit condescending, which is why that trust is going to decline. So the way that it was handled, it's okay for politicians to campaign, but it's not okay for people to gather for festive season. So it's a little bit it makes it difficult to believe exactly what is the agenda here. But nonetheless, I think people need just to vaccinate, because that is the only thing that we can use to dealing the pace of infections and economic activity. And to be quite honest, I was speaking with the two restaurateurs yesterday. They say they can't afford another lockdown. If there is one, they will be out of business completely. And this will add to businesses that were decimated in the July riots that never came back. You know, many restaurants that went extinct because of the previous lockdowns and the high unemployment rate that we have. So really, government needs to think about this very carefully on what is it that they're going to encourage, lockdown or encourage people to vaccinate. I think it's the latter that will save us.
Yeah, and an opportunity to build on that, Raymond, to increase those numbers that I mentioned in the beginning. Only over 100,000 weekly. We need to be at three or four times that if we're going to get to three quarters of the population vaccinated. And yet we're sitting with stock that might expire because we don't want to give boosters to the elderly. It just, again, seems to be very haphazardly managed at the moment.
Well, I think, Michael, just 2 points in relation to what Isa said before, my esteemed colleague. He and I agree about interest rates, but we disagree about communication strategy. He himself has hinted that the way you do things is actually quite important. To do the right thing in the wrong way is sometimes just as fatal as doing the wrong thing. And I felt that it should have been the Minister of Health who should have made the definitive announcement this week. He should have not trailed the scientists, but should have been ahead of them. But be that as it may, I think you're absolutely right. We do need to nuance our vaccination strategy, to use up the stocks that exist. I think it's important, once again, how you handle the announcements that come out of the weekend are very important from government's point of view, from South Africa's point of view, even from a global perspective point of view on how we're dealing with it. It's very important that it be seen to be managed in a sensible and a balanced way, and that the communication strategies reinforce what the messages should be so that you build trust. Trust depends very much on perceptions, and perceptions depend to a large extent on how you communicate or how you are seen to communicate, even bad news. So I think the important point now is that what must come out of this weekend must be a set of decisions that reassures us that we can deal with what we're confronting now, that we will adapt whatever strategies we have to adapt in terms of vaccination, and that the clear message must go out: vigilance and vaccination are the two pillars on which we must basically build how we're going to handle the next few months.
Raymond, I think you raised some very good points there, but I want to come back, Warwick, to what you said about this lack of trust. And again, it does boil down to the data that is being delivered, or perhaps in some cases being poorly communicated. Because the big question here is, we still don't know whether this new variant triggered the current wave that we seem to be entering, or just happened to coincide with it. And the data seems suggestive of the former, but it is an odd coincidence here. And so, again, my point about the timing of this is absolutely critical. Surely the scientists should have had a better handle on answering those kinds of questions before you go public in such a fashion. Rather have government to just continue to message around non-pharmaceutical interventions before you create panic or stir fear.
Well, I guess the devil lies in the detail, Michael, but I mean, going back to the issue of how do you return confidence? Well, I mean, consider, for example, how did you return confidence, or some kind of confidence, in the rand when you had the exchange controls? Exchange controls, intending to create the outcome where there was trust in the rand, in fact created distrust. And it's exactly the same in the handling of information. So you basically need to have a process whereby you actually engage with the content or the issue at hand so that you can get the resolution you want, instead of simply mandating, this is how it shall be done, because it gets people's backs up. And anyone who's ever raised teenagers will tell you the same thing. You try and clamp down too hard, and the result is rebellion. And actually, it's not just teenagers that are like that. People are like that. So that's what government needs to get away, is engage the people as partners instead of little minor citizens as minions, you know?
And I hear what you're saying there. Transparency, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And you can argue that anything less than full transparency isn't transparency at all. It is one of those binaries. But we are also operating in this global environment where it now looks like South Africa is a pariah as a result of this. But to your point, Isa, very little we can do. The facts are the facts. This new variant is a variant, seemingly, that is going to become a variant of concern, judging by the global response. Just as we end off, and Raymond, we were supposed to touch on it last week. We just didn't have time. I know you had many engagements with F.W. de Klerk. And, you know, the figure of F.W. de Klerk historically divides a lot of people. He's been compared with historical leaders who saw the writing on the wall and decided to do something about it. And for others, he's been described as someone who never really fully owned up to his past. How do you remember F.W. de Klerk?
Well, Michael, I think one can't put him onto a pedestal, as one shouldn't put any leader onto a pedestal. Most leaders have got clay feet, and he was also one of them. But I think what one has to say, as you've indicated, what is the test, what is the historical test of leadership? That a successful leader So a successful political leader is someone who sees what the major anxiety or concern of his society or his nation is and seeks to resolve it. And in that sense, de Klerk stepped up to the plate of apartheid and decided that he would change the course of history in South Africa. I think, and that can't be taken away from him, whatever else might be said about acts or sins of omission which he might have been involved in. The fact is that he successfully passed that test of leadership. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking, even with all the problems, as we are talking today. So I think that must be put on the credit side. Finally, I think, although he was not solely responsible, it was the outcome of a negotiation in which several parties, including the ANC, took part. The fact is we have a constitution, a viable constitution, which embodies several issues that are important to the business community. That is, for example, property rights, the independence of the central bank, the role of the Auditor General. I recall all those being issues of interaction at the time between business and the negotiators. And I think that must also form part of his legacy, that the constitution we enjoy today is partly his legacy.
Raymond, thank you very much. Well, we are waiting for our family meeting. Most people expecting it to be this Sunday to see what the outcome is going to be of government's deliberations around this new variant. Let's hope it isn't too much of a blue Monday. That was Raymond Parsons of the Northwest Business School, who's joined by Warwick Lucas, head of Galileo Securities, and Isa Mplunga, chief economist at Alex Forbes, with the week in perspective here on Business Watch.